when I'm tired. Then I was sitting back on the toilet seat, waiting for whatever signal I was supposed to get, telling me that it was safe to make my escape. It didn't take but a minute before my signal became clear. In the form of the 6'3" muscled man who was my mate. My very pissed-off mate. The moment he came into the bathroom, I was in his arms, my legs wrapped around his waist with my hands circled around his neck. He didn't give us a chance to reconnect either. The moment I was firmly in place, he stood back up and immediately started walking out the door. Mace waited for us, seeming no worse for wear. Ian walked in fast stride straight for Mace, practically tossing me on his back as I held on for dear life. The minute he was situated behind me, we were in the air, Mace pumping his large hulking wings and taking us far, far away from that shithole place. Ian buried his face into my neck while I clutched at his arms. My fingernails were digging into the skin of his arms, but he didn't seem to care, and I couldn't seem to stop myself from doing it. Now that I was safe again, everything that had happened over the last 48 hours began to overwhelm me. It was all too much, and I was on the brink of losing it. Thoroughly. We'd been in the sky for less than 3 minutes, when I felt Ian tense behind me, causing me to turn to look at him. And what I saw over my shoulder had me damn near falling out of the godforsaken sky. "Shane!" I cried. "What in the ever-loving fuck?"
"Shane," Ian echoed. "His name's not Shane. His name is Merrick Brown."
And that's when everything started to fall into place.
Chapter 22. I've made it from lying on the bed to sitting up on the side of the bed. There's no stopping me now. Ian's secret thoughts. Ian. I was glaring at Shane, or Merrick Brown, like he was a bug about to be squished by my boot. Though if I had my choice, I would be squishing him, slowly, with my bare hands. God, I could gladly rip him apart, piece by piece, until he was nothing but a pile of twitching body parts. Kiefer finally stood, placing a tired-looking Blythe down on the chair he'd previously occupied, and pointed at Merrick. "It's time for you to start explaining," Kiefer growled. Shane looked over at Wink in apology, and then turned back to Kiefer. "My life before y'all was normal. Met Maddie and Wink. We became good friends, and then we lived our lives. Until I turned 21, that was," Merrick sighed. "It started before I was 21, actually. Dogs started showing up randomly at my house. Cats. Fucking birds and squirrels. Then while I was out in the woods, something happened to me, and I was suddenly... more. You came into your powers," Nikolai gasped. Merrick's eyes flicked to the big man who was holding his pregnant mate protectively in the curve of his arms. Once he took in the big man, he nodded, then moved his gaze back to Kiefer. "Right. I came into my powers in the woods, about 30 yards away from that cabin. My brows went up, surprise leeching into me. That cabin was becoming more and more interesting by the hour." "Keep going," Kiefer said with barely hidden annoyance. Merrick grimaced. "My dragon came, but it was at a price." "What kind of price?" Jean-Luc asked this time. My lips twitched at the sight of him. He was sitting awkwardly next to Maddie, being careful not to touch her. His entire body was stiff and looked uncomfortable as hell. He was as close as he could get to her without actually touching her. And it got me to wondering, why was he trying so hard? Was he afraid of what would happen if he did and a bond showed? But then Merrick's words captured my attention again. "My dragon, Sasha, was already owned. The moment our bond came through, though, the previous ownership, or forced compliance on his owner's part, was broken and he was now mine." Merrick looked down. "Sasha hated me. Hated me with a passion, and it took me nearly 10 years of trying to win him over before he finally understood the benefits of having me as his dragon rider." "But," Derek, Kiefer's advisor and another dragon rider, asked, But what I didn't know at the time was that the ownership wasn't completely dissolved. Although Sasha thought it was, it wasn't. Robert had just been buying time until he needed the two of us again. He dropped his head into his hands, looking defeated. The moment came last year, and that's when I woke up and realized that I didn't have any other choice but do his bidding. He planted something inside of me that forced me to his will. The Geas, I supplied to the others. Merrick looked at me and nodded his thanks, his eyes skittering past Wink's hot gaze before he could truly read the anger written all over her. The Geas, he confirmed. I had no choice. Everything that I did was by force, and if I didn't comply, my sister or my friends became targets. He gave a pointed look at Wink.
We were never once threatened, Wink shot back. And since when do you have a sister?
He found my sister, who I hadn't seen since we were split up in foster care, and thought she'd do just as well as the others. Merrick frowned. He tortured her and her mate, but the Geas kept me from doing a damn thing about it. And I've spent the last month trying to make everything I fucked up right again. Found my sister's mate's dragon, too, but... He hesitated. Can one of you close off this room so what I have to say doesn't leave this room? He looked out the window nervously. Derek waved his hand, and my ears popped.
Done, he said. Continue.
Merrick stood up and walked to the window, looking out over the lawn. All of the dragons were out there. Every last one of them that was a part of the sanctuary was on the back lawn. It was definitely a sight to see. When he got his fill of what he was looking at, he turned to stare at the room as a whole. He has more dragons, at least 20 of them. That statement dropped like a lead balloon in the small room, and the women gasped.
Fucking shit, Kiefer growled. God damn it.
Merrick nodded his head. And I think, he hesitated, I think that one of the dragons is the mated pair to another of your dragons. My heart started to pound as I remembered the conversation I'd overheard earlier between Mace and Wink. Wink tensed beside me, and her eyes met mine, fear clouding them. Wink stood up, but didn't leave my side.
It's Daya, isn't it?
Merrick looked up, his eyes connecting with Wink's for the first time since he'd arrived at our sides earlier in the day.
It is? But she died. Mace said so,
Wink asked in confusion.
She is.
Almost. She's as close as she can be without actually being dead. A pile of bones and flesh with no will whatsoever to lift her head or try to eat, Merrick confirmed.
Then how is she still alive?
Brooklyn asked.
He's keeping her alive just like he did me.
Wink's head whipped around and her eyes bored into mine.
If he gets her loose, if he finds a way to get her out, can you save her?
I opened my mouth and then closed it.
I don't know, I admitted. I've only ever worked on a human body before.
Her eyes pleaded with me.
But you'll try?
I nodded my head slowly.
I'll try.
She breathed a sigh of relief and retook her seat.
What's his agenda? Blythe asked. What is he doing? What is he trying to accomplish by enslaving dragons?
Merrick shook his head.
I've never been able to figure out why. All I know is what he made me do, and that was help the purists. He's not one, but he's something.
He paused, looking torn on what he was about to say.
And I've seen Pharaoh come into the area 5 times over the last 6 weeks.
I stiffened. Kiefer did as well.
And has he made contact with Robert?
Kiefer asked carefully.
Merrick shook his head.
Before I could stop her, Wink shot to her feet.
He was in your office,
she blurted.
He went through your files, took some, and then left when you showed up shortly after he started looking.
I closed my eyes as Kiefer turned his angry glare her way.
He what?
I walked behind Kiefer, sure that if I didn't, he would likely kill his brother before we got any information out of him.
Wait, Kiefer,
I grabbed his shoulder. You need to calm down. If you go in there all hot and bothered, he's going to clam up before you get anything out of him. Kiefer gave me an evil grin.
That's why I brought Jean-Luc.
He pointed at the other man that was walking beside me. I sighed and picked up the pace, determined to get to Pharaoh before Kiefer. Despite what he thought, Kiefer wouldn't be happy if he didn't get the full story first before he killed him, and I didn't doubt for 1 minute that he wouldn't kill him. Pharaoh may be his brother, but Kiefer was the king. He had everybody's well-being on his hands. The sacrifice of one, even if it was his brother, was better for his people. I let him go and raised my hands when he continued to stare at me expectantly.
Just don't come crying to me tomorrow when you feel bad.
His laugh made my stomach hurt. Yeah, it was doubtful he would ever come to me.
What's with that look?
Kiefer stopped and stared at me. My brows rose, surprised that he would even notice a change of expression on my face.
Nothing. Let's go, I grumbled, starting the procession of people forward once more.
Nikolai, Derek, Jean-Luc, Kiefer, and I were all on our way to Faro. Faro lived in his old girlfriend's apartment, and it only just occurred to me how he was living there. Apartments cost money, and Faro wasn't working. He'd never worked, in fact.
How did he afford to get this place? I asked the group as a whole.
I looked over Wink's rental agreement when we first got together, when I backed out of our lease for her and paid the early termination fees. That apartment goes for upwards of $1,200 a month. That's a pretty penny for someone who doesn't have a job and hasn't had one in his entire life.
Kiefer's cheek clenched. I've been wondering much the same thing for a very long time, Kiefer grumbled, and I haven't come up with other answers. I'd hoped by making him responsible for doing the nightly security with you that he'd catch the protector bug, but it only seems to have put him off of doing his Dragon Rider duties instead of wanting more. That thought had occurred to me after the one and only night I'd taken him with me on my patrols. He'd been uncaring, uninterested in learning, and had decided early on during the patrol that this just wasn't for him, something which he'd said to me multiple times that night.
He could be selling information on you to pay his rent, I offered.
Kiefer's eye started to twitch.
That would be one of the better case scenarios, Derek mumbled to himself.
Not quietly enough for us not to hear him, though.
The rest of the trip to Pharaoh's apartment was uneventful, and we arrived at the apartment complex within 5 minutes. That was the benefit of being a Dragon Rider, though. We could skim over the freaking interstates and highways, where traffic was heavy enough that it was backed up for miles, while we enjoyed the freedom of gliding over the road, being able to get anywhere without having to stop. Though guilt had hit me when we'd gone after Pharaoh instead of Mace's mate. I knew when Mace finally realized that I knew longer than he that he wouldn't forget it, especially if something happened to her while we were working to free her. I thought it best not to tell him anything until we had a better idea of the situation, and it was more than apparent that Pharaoh knew more than he was letting on. Not that he'd told us anything at all. Which surprised me, because Pharaoh was usually pretty open about his dislike for all things family and Dragon Rider related. We touched down, one after the other, in the back parking lot of the apartment complex and dismounted. The moment we were free of their backs, our dragons cloaked themselves and disappeared from view, even though they were all still there. I could see each and every one of their DNA signatures. Even Pharaoh's dragon in the back of the lot, who looked bored and wished he could be anywhere other than where he was.
Pharaoh's dragon is here in the back corner of the lot, Nikolai pointed.
How do you know? Kiefer asked absently.
Nikolai snorted.
Heat signature, brother dear. Among his other powers, Nikolai could also read heat signatures. If he wanted, he could tell us exactly how many people were in the building we were heading into. And apparently he wanted to, because the next sentence out of his mouth said as much.
There are 20 people in the complex, all of them but 2 are on the bottom floor, Nikolai explained.
Are there 2 heat signatures in Pharaoh's apartment? Kiefer questioned as we started to take the stairs. Derek and Jean-Luc took the north set of stairs that would lead to the opposite side of the hallway and would make sure that Pharaoh didn't try to make any great escapes. But it turns out the moment we let ourselves into Pharaoh's apartment that he wouldn't be making any great escapes, at least not with his woman there anyway. A woman who I'd seen dead with my own goddamn eyes.
Pharaoh looked at his brother with his eyes filled with sorrow.
I needed her. She's my heart, Pharaoh apologized, looking at his brother like he was ravaged by the decision he had to make. And I was sure that he was ravaged. Had I been in his position and seen my own woman get killed, then I would have likely done absolutely anything to change that fact.
How? Kiefer asked in a deadly quiet tone.
Pharaoh swallowed, looked over at his girlfriend, cough zombie, and licked his lips.
It was a... Pharaoh cleared his throat.
Trap, the not-so-dead woman, Macy, finished for him. I was killed, and he was sitting here waiting for Pharaoh the moment he showed.
He who? Kiefer pushed.
Pharaoh and Macy looked at each other, and Kiefer growled with impatience.
This isn't a time to be contemplating a lie, Pharaoh. What you've done has a fucking word, and it's called treason. According to Dragon Rider law, treason is punishable by death. There are no excuses here. Either you are found guilty or you are not, Derek growled, and your mate suffers the same fate as you.
Now would be a good time to start talking. I looked over at Nikolai, whose hands had fisted at hearing what Derek had just said, and I wondered if I'd need to pull him off Derek. Kiefer, though, was the one to surprise me. He looked resigned, like this was what he knew it was coming to all along. Pharaoh's face looked ashen, as did Jean-Luc's. Jean-Luc's parents had been on the receiving end of such a punishment, not by the Dragon Riders, but by his mom's people. See, Dragon Riders weren't the only big bad entity on the planet. In fact, there were a lot of fucked up things in this world, such as the Skinwalkers. Skinwalkers weren't bad, per se, but it was yet to be determined if they were good, either. Skinwalkers were born to the powers, just like we were, but where our power came to us from our dragons, theirs came from sacrifices. Most didn't use sacrifices lightly. If a sacrifice had to be made, they'd use already dying animals. In very rare instances, and only of the gravest circumstances, then they'd use healthy animals. It was absolutely forbidden to use a human sacrifice. But that's just what Jean-Luc's parents had done when they found out that he had cancer. They'd made a human sacrifice, and they'd saved Jean-Luc by helping him into not only his Dragon Rider powers, but also his Skinwalker powers. "She's not my mate," Pharaoh looked over to Macy. "Yet," he added, "Robert bargained, in exchange for bringing her back to life, that I give him information on Dragon Riders. I gave him some bogus lore, made some stuff up, and mostly told him about my own powers. I didn't tell him a thing about yours."
"What about what we saw you taking from my office?"
"Birth certificate," he muttered, his eyes going to Macy's. "You need a birth certificate to get married."
Kiefer's jaw clenched. "What else?" he pushed.
Pharaoh shook his head. "I gave him what I had, and he's left us alone since."
"And what other powers does Macy have?"
Kiefer stared at Macy like he was studying a bug under a microscope.
"Is she fully alive? What is Robert?"
Pharaoh swallowed. "Her heart beats," he was quick to inform us, "but he holds her life in his hand through an artifact."
"Something like this?" I held up the one we'd been able to strip of its power over Wink only hours before. That had been Jean-Luc's doing. He'd been able to use his Skinwalker skills to pull the charm's life force out and put it back into Wink. I'd watched him do the entire ritual and had been amazed while watching him work. Usually he was pretty secretive when it came to his Skinwalker abilities. He saw them as shameful, something his parents had given him when he'd not wanted them. It wasn't often when he practiced them. Only under very special occasions, he'd informed us. Lucky for me and Wink that returning her life force to her was a special occasion. Pharaoh nodded his head enthusiastically. Macy, however, stiffened and pushed herself away from it, her face going deathly pale.
"Be careful," she pleaded.
I blinked in surprise.
"Why?" "Because they're so sensitive. Anything you do to it, it does to the person who it controls."
She licked her lips nervously. I nodded my head. "Jean-Luc was able to fix Wink right up after we got it from him. When we get yours from Robert, he'll do the same for you," Kiefer promised. "But that doesn't let either one of you off the hook."
"How are you going to get it from him?"
Macy's voice quivered with unshed tears. I looked over the blonde woman's features. She looked much different now than she had the last time I'd seen her, although then she'd had a lovely bullet hole through her heart. How had I been so wrong about who killed her? That had never happened before. I knew exactly who did what based on their DNA signatures. DNA was a simple thing. For me, anyway. I could see exactly who'd been in this room in the last 48 hours based on the skin cells that were in the room. If I wished to push further, I could even go as far as weeks past if I wished to dig that deep. I, however, didn't. That took time. Time that I didn't think we had. "As soon as we find Robert," Kiefer started to say,
"I can help you with that,"
Pharaoh told us, standing up.
"I can."
Kiefer looked at him skeptically.
"And how exactly do you plan to do that?"
Nikolai piped in. Pharaoh stood up.
"I can follow trails. All you have to do is lead me somewhere he's been recently."
He nodded his head eagerly. "I think, after this, you have some explaining to do."
Chapter 23 Mating. When dating goes too far. Wink's secret thoughts. Wink. Brooklyn, Blythe, Skylar, Merrick and I all looked at the newcomer with surprise. We were at the sanctuary, and we'd been having breakfast, when Macy was practically dropped into our laps. "Take care of her, Skylar," Pharaoh pleaded. Can you look her over? Make sure that she's okay? I licked my lips, my eyes becoming calculating as I wondered exactly why she would need a checkup. She didn't look sick. In fact, she looked perfectly healthy. She must have realized we were wondering why, too, because she smiled and took a seat across from us on the windowsill that overlooked the sanctuary's backyard. By the time she was finished telling us about her harrowing experience, starting with getting shot and finishing with being brought back to life by Robert, I was on the edge of my seat. That's amazing, Brooklyn breathed. That's, in fact, beyond amazing. Wow. I concurred. The whole thing was fantastical. I hesitated when I realized how quiet it had gotten. Where did they go? Where did who go? Blythe looked over at me. I turned around and scanned the big room. It's too quiet. I stood. Why is it so quiet? What do you mean it's too quiet? Brooklyn got up to stand next to me. It's loud. The TV is blaring and the air conditioner is making quite a bit of noise. Quiet is not something that goes over well when you share a house with 15,000 people. I shook my head and walked to the window. Where are the guys? I asked, starting around the couch to head for the door that led to the backyard. The house had like 15 doors that led to the outside, and four of them were on the back wing of the house. The house itself was shaped like an E, and we were on the top part of it that housed the great room, the kitchen, the breakfast nook, and a sunroom. The back stretch housed all of the bedrooms, and apparently wings, as the others like to call them. The entire place was fucking massive, and I found that there was always a buzz of activity. But today, right now, there was none of that buzz. It was only the TV and the quiet chatter of talking. They said to go to the great room where y'all were, which is where Pharaoh took me, as you can see, and they'd leave once I was safe, Macy explained quietly. Was that bad? They left without us, I murmured, freezing in the doorway. Skylar, I started, turning my head to her. Do you have security footage of the hospital? My eyes went to the mini-clinic-type structure that was housed on the ground floor with an exit to the side grounds, and I studied the area. Yes, Skylar stood up. He'll have to come to my rooms, though. I don't know if I can figure out Nikolai's system off of his. I can, Brooklyn said, but I still don't see the problem. There aren't any dragons, I said. And where are the staff? The dragons are on the back side of the property. Shane, Merrick, said from the other side of the room. They're having a meeting. What kind of meeting? I turned to my old friend. Maddie was at his side, and she had her fingers to her lips as she nervously bit away at her fingernails. I don't know, he shrugged. You just asked where they were and I told you. You know where all the animals are? I asked. He nodded. I do. What else do you sense? I pushed. He looked at me like he wanted to say something more, like an apology. And I shook my head. Now wasn't the time. I wasn't sure when that time would come, but right now wasn't going to be it. Hell, next year might be too soon, too. He chose to let me have that play, and closed his eyes, concentrating. I remembered when he used to do this when we were younger. I'd thought it was just him being a daydreamer. But lo and behold, he'd had these abilities for almost as long as we'd been friends, and had kept them a secret from Maddie and me all this time. And I found that it really irritated me. I would have never broken his confidence had he shared his news with me. Yet he'd chosen to keep it to himself, deftly keeping Maddie and I out of that part of his life almost as easily as he'd kept his real identity at bay. Forest creatures, outside the perimeter, nothing in here, he murmured. In here where? I interrupted him. There's a perimeter that rings the sanctuary about 5 miles out. It keeps all the baddies away, Brooklyn explained, watching us with worried eyes. I turned my attention back to Shane. Merrick, fuck, I'd never be able to get his name right in my head. Not when he'd been Shane to me for so long. What does it keep out? I asked, just as the room started to shake. Not dragons, Skylar said as she walked to the window and looked out. not dragons. I walked with her to the window, and my breath stalled in my lungs. Oh, shit. Dragons of all shapes and colors started to file in over the sanctuary. 1, 2, 10. And they weren't any I'd ever seen before. Merrick, someone said from behind me. What's going on? I turned to find Merrick behind me, his eyes closed and his body strung tight like a bow. They're not right. What do you mean they're not right? I asked in alarm. He means that they're not right. Like me, Macy whispered. What? Blythe started, but her words were quickly cut off by a startled scream that fell from her throat. My babies! Then she was running, and we were all running behind her.
Chapter 24 Put your laundry away, or I'll punch you in the face. Note from Wink to Ian. Ian.
They're not here, Pharaoh said.
I looked around, staring at the empty cages. They looked old and rickety, and not something that would have held any of our dragons.
What do you think? I asked Mace.
I think that you need to go home, he said easily.
Why?
Because all is not right, he replied.
What's not right? I pushed.
Something.
Shaking my head, I looked over to Kiefer.
I need to go.
Why?
He looked at me incredulously. You have plenty of time to go do your thing. He pointed to all the things I could go read.
You leave, we have nothing.
I shook my head.
Mace is telling me to leave. I trust his instincts, I informed him.
Kiefer looked at Mace, who hadn't gotten any closer than the copse of trees that outlined the edge of the property.
Fine. We come back after we make sure everything's all right, he commanded.
I nodded my head and patted the side of Mace's neck.
Home, big guy.
Mace lifted up with a rush of wind, the force of the move pushing me down into his back as he moved faster and faster away from the place we'd just been.
You have more, I told him. I do not wish to discuss it.
He'd found her DNA. He'd realized that she was there. Was being the operative word. New DNA looked different from old DNA. Fresher. More vibrant. I knew he knew with everything I had, but something was keeping him away. Something was telling him to turn back, and I trusted Mace more than I trusted anyone other than Wink. If he said we had to leave, we had to leave. There were no other options. It was when we were 5 minutes out from the sanctuary that something in the air changed around us. Something sinister felt like it was on the horizon, and I knew that whatever it was going to be bad. And my fears were realized moments later when 1 second we were flying through the air as usual, and the next we were plummeting to the ground at an alarming rate of speed. I, like most other dragon riders, was taught when we initially started riding that the first thing we do in case of an emergency is get to our dragon's feet. So I climbed down his neck and jumped. He caught me in midair, almost like we'd practiced a million times before, even though we'd never once done it, and he gripped me tightly in his claw. When we were going through training with Kiefer, he'd taught us what his father had taught him. Dragons were large beasts that used their entire bodies to get airborne. However, when a rider was on a dragon's back, they didn't use the full force they were capable of so as not to hurt the rider with the wind shear and drag of their wings rising and falling. So during an emergency, with the rider secured in the dragon's feet, they were able to use all the power of their bodies to gain maximum speed, which was the reason riders were trained to move. My heart was sprinting at a million miles an hour, and I watched as the ground came at us, faster and faster. Just when I thought we were going to hit hard, something changed in the air, and suddenly Mace was able to fly once again. I looked over just in time to see Jean-Luc pitch over sideways.
"Catch him!"
I bellowed, my stomach dropping when he started to go down in what felt like slow motion. Kiefer was 1 step ahead of me, reaching out with 1 long arm and latching onto Jean-Luc's unconscious form before he could make it to the ground. While Kiefer was busy catching Jean-Luc, Mace was working at pulling us back up, cloaking us both with invisibility that would shield us from everyone else, even the other dragon riders. My eyes went around to the others, and 1 by 1, each pair of dragons and riders disappeared behind their own cloaks of invisibility. Kiefer was the final visible rider to blink out, and with 1 last look behind him, he and his dragon were cloaked. My eyes returned to the horizon, and I swallowed. I think we need to drop down, I pointed at Mace, just in case that fucker uses those powers again. I obviously wasn't the only one with that thought, because the moment we touched down on the ground, I heard the others talking.
It's another skinwalker, Jean-Luc assured us. There's nobody else on Earth who has those kinds of powers.
I ignored them, continuing the walk to the sanctuary without waiting to see if they followed. I'd just stepped over the line that denoted the boundary of Dragonrider territory when I felt it. Something was not right.
What's going on?
I sent my thoughts to Wink. I don't know, Wink growled. I just know that something is happening. Something. There are other dragons everywhere, but they're not doing anything but flying around. I made my way to the clearing ahead and froze when I saw the dragons flying over the sanctuary. There were at least 200 of them. At least.
He can't control them, Nikolai murmured at my side. The way the shield works is that all powers can't be used inside the boundary lines. Well, ours can, but all outsiders can't. I've worked everyone's blood into the shield. He might have made it through, but there's literally nothing he can do to us power-wise besides be in here and do any physical damage he's capable of. Look.
He gestured to the boundary line I could see, and I watched as one of the dragons who'd been unfortunate to recross the line was struggling to get back into the boundary. But the dragon was losing. That also might have to do with the fact that the dragon was emaciated to the point that she looked like skin and bones, as if she'd not eaten a very, very long time. Though that's what all of them looked like in some way, shape, or form. The silver dragon, the one struggling to get back across, was worse than the rest, though. I just decided to step over to see what I could do when Mace shot out of the cover of the trees, all signs of cloaking gone, and missiled toward the dragon that was struggling. And it was then that it occurred to me. That dragon was the other half of his bonded pair, his mate, Daya. Mace was only inches away from her when a sudden push had Daya slipping even further over the line. And that's when I shouted,
"Help her!"
Dragons from all over dropped down from the sky, and I looked over in awe. But they all weren't moving just to save her. Some were circling the man attempting to recapture her, preparing to move in for the kill. The problem was that when they got too close to the line, they started getting sucked in too. Smart enough to know that I couldn't go through the throng of dragons, I started running, being careful to hug the edges of the sanctuary boundaries as I went. The moment I got close enough, Robert, the man from the park who'd tried to take me down only days prior, was standing there with an intense look of concentration on his face, and dead human bodies littered all around him. I watched in horror as he plunged his dagger down into the heart of another human sacrifice, killing her instantly. Her life blood began to ooze from her and pool around them just as he uttered another word. A word of power.
"Come!" he bellowed.
I hit him like a ton of bricks, taking him out like a linebacker sacking a quarterback. One second he was standing, and the next he was on the ground, my fist pounding into his face. Robert tried to fight back, but the rage I was feeling through my bond with Mace, combined with my own, had me spiraling out of control. What did snap me back to myself was the knife through my left thigh. Pain burst through my body as the realization that I wasn't paying enough attention poured through me. But my reaction time, as well as recovery time, was a whole lot better than most. That was a plus to being beaten a lot by various foster parents and street thugs when I was a kid into my teenage years. Before he could think to remove the dagger from my leg, I yanked it out and thrust it down into his heart like he'd done to the young woman just moments before. His eyes widened and his mouth started to part at the edges.
"I'm one of many," Robert coughed. "You may have killed me, but you won't be left alone. Not anymore."
Robert's grin was filled with blood as his eyes started to go distant. I looked at Kiefer, who appeared at my side. Kiefer had heard Robert's words.
"Don't,"
Kiefer shook his head. I froze with my hand on his chest. "If I heal him, we could get more out of him," I informed him. Kiefer cleared his throat.
"Jean-Luc shared his fears with me. I think we know what's going on."
Kiefer's eyes went to the bodies lying in the grass all around us.
"What a fucking mess. I think everyone needs to be enlightened to just what in the hell is going on," Derek growled from beside us.
I concurred.
"I agree," I stood up, my legs screaming.
"I'm coming."
"No."
"Yes."
I sighed as I saw her start our way, weaving in between dragons who'd collapsed onto the ground in exhaustion the moment they were free of whatever Robert had done to them.
"Let me see,"
she ordered, snapping her fingers at me the moment she was within a couple of feet.
"What, do you want me to drop my pants in front of everyone?"
I drawled. She turned her glare at me.
"Yes," she snapped, "I do."
Rolling my eyes, I picked up the dagger from Robert's chest and used it to cut a hole into my pants, ripping the jean material apart until the wound was exposed. My entire leg had blood dripping down it, and she gasped the moment she saw it.
"Does it hurt?"
she cried, dropping down amongst the bodies and the blood. Before I could protest her doing it, she placed her hand on my leg, and my own power started to stir to match hers. This was the last place that I would ever wish to have these kind of reactions, amongst the dead and our friends, but my body reacted to hers, and I had no hope against it. It just was. My skin started to tingle as the cells started to repair themselves, and within 2 minutes, pink scar tissue formed over the wound.
"Done,"
she smiled, happy with herself. I yanked her up by her arms out of the blood-saturated grass and crushed her body against mine. The adrenaline was still coursing through my veins, and I couldn't get it to stop.
"I think it would be better if I leave," Jean-Luc's rough voice filled the air around us. "It's not going to end. At least if I'm not here, then we might find a way to circumvent this before it gets out of hand."
No one said a word to disagree with him, and my stomach turned. I was closest to Jean-Luc. He'd been the one and only person to actively try to incorporate me into the daily life of the Dragon Riders. Without him here, I wouldn't have that any longer.
"No," Kiefer said after a while of contemplation. "We're stronger with you. You stay."
A grin found its way to my mouth, and I felt like shit for smiling when tragedy surrounded us. Luckily, mine wasn't the only smile among us.
"That's why they kept the dragons for so long,"
Wink's devastated eyes lifted to mine hours later.
"That kept her for her skin. If we'd been only a day longer, they would have skinned her and used her skin to come after us."
We were all clean. Dragons were bedded down in the grass surrounding the sanctuary, their bellies full for the first time in a long time. The most wonderful thing, however, was seeing Mace and Daya together. I'd yet to see them for more than 5 or 10 minutes at a time while they were either eating or drinking, but it was enough to ensure that I knew they were both healing. Daya, when we'd first seen her, had been terribly emaciated. She'd likely been only days away from death, if not hours. Now, with the heart so close by, and her mate at her side, as well as a belly full of food and drink, she looked like a completely different dragon. Although there was no hiding the haunted shadows in her eyes. Kiefer's sharp inhalation had me turning to him, and the grim look in his eyes matched my own.
"It's likely that there are more than just this," I told him. "We need to actively start searching for them."
"And how are we going to do that?" Kiefer growled.
"Me," Pharaoh stepped forward. "I can do this. I already did do this."
He pointed at Mace and Daya, who were together, their heads touching.
"I found them. I can find the others."
"And how exactly do you expect me to trust you after today?" Kiefer asked.
"You've ruined what little faith I had in you."
Pharaoh swallowed.
"What would you do for Blythe?"
Kiefer's eyes narrowed.
"Exactly," Pharaoh snapped. "All this time and you'd do the same goddamned thing that I did. You know you would."
"You don't know shit," Kiefer denied.
"I know that I've been in love with her since I was 16 years old. I may only be 21 and a half, but I know my heart. She's mine, and you continuously took her away from me. I can't begin to count the number of times you dragged me away from her. You tried to tell me to stay away, but I can't."
"Not with the love that Macy and I have."
Pharaoh stood up straighter.
"We aren't mated," Kiefer snapped.
"You have no fucking clue about anything. You've been so far entranced in your own shit that you've never stopped to think about other things. Like, what if you find your mate?" he snapped.
"I realize you love her, but your mate, when she comes, won't care that you love another woman."
"You'll literally kill her, and you, if you stay away from her. What are you going to do then?" Pharaoh's mouth snapped shut. "I don't do the things I do to keep you from having what you want. I do it because I know what's best. I'm older. I am the king. My word is law." Pharaoh bared his teeth.
"I won't accept you separating us."
Pharaoh stood, fists clenched.
"I won't separate you," Kiefer said. "Your mate will do that when the time comes."
He hesitated.
"And when that time comes, when your mate comes, I won't stop you. But until that time comes, you may keep your pet."
Pharaoh growled.
That's what she is she not?
Kiefer challenged Farrell. She's going to be my wife. That dropped like a fucking bomb in the room.
Farrell, Nikolai stepped in, find the dragons. Help us. Keep your nose clean. Stay with your woman. But for yours and her sake, don't marry her. Don't make any hasty decisions. And for God's sake, don't think with your cock.
Farrell gritted his teeth to keep the retort from passing through his lips, and I had to give it to him. For once, he was showing that he knew when to shut up. That was new. A few hours ago, he'd have given it just as good as he got it and damned the consequences.
You have one more chance, Farrell. Kiefer held out his hand. Thank you for helping us today.
Thank you for making the right decision, and thank you for saving the dragons.
Farrell looked at Kiefer's outstretched hand and then took it.
I won't let you down, he promised.
Kiefer's smile was sad. I sure hope not.
Chapter 25. Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, except tacos and cupcakes. Oh, and cookies. Wink's secret thoughts. Wink. I made my way out of the spacious room we'd been provided at the sanctuary and back down the stairs just outside our private suite. Our new home. The one that Kiefer had demanded we move into. Though I wasn't the only one that was new to the place. Jean-Luc had been instructed to move in as well. And let's not forget Maddie. She was situated in another hallway that was meant for single occupants. The single occupants would share a common kitchen and dining area, while the other mated pairs had their own mini apartments to themselves. I just made my way into the large dining room, when an amused, darkly erotic voice filled the air.
A lot has changed since we've been gone, the man drawled. Can't say that it makes me happy that all the eye candy moves in after we're told to stay gone.
I gasped, turning to face the stranger's voice. I was wary of strangers, as anyone who'd had a couple of days like I had would be, and immediately calmed down when Ian wrapped his arm around my neck.
Mine, he snarled at the man that was sitting on a kitchen chair in front of us. Mine.
That one was directed a different way, and my eyes widened when I saw the other newcomer. Both had brown hair and blue eyes, but that was where the similarities ended. The one who'd addressed me first was introduced as Ford, while the other one that had been in the corner was introduced as Alaric.
The last time we were here, no one that wasn't mated was allowed to be here.
Ford looked pointedly at Macy and Maddie in the corner. Then they flicked to Shane, a.k.a. Merrick.
A lot has changed, Kiefer said as he came into the room. Have you been introduced?
Ford and Alaric both nodded.
What was the emergency? Ford asked.
He seemed like a talker, and under different circumstances, I was sure I'd find him a lot more appealing. However, after yesterday, I didn't find anything appealing but what I knew. And I didn't know these men. Something I must have made them aware of because they gave me the distance I needed. Though that might have been Ian's angry look at my back that was keeping them at bay. I just decided to sit down with a plate of food that Ian had somehow magically produced when something occurred to me.
There's food moving off the table, I whispered frantically to Ian.
Ian's eyes flicked to the table where a sausage was being pulled off of a plate, and he snapped his fingers. The sausage paused in its descent to the floor. And I froze when it felt like something had jumped on my leg. Two somethings, one on each thigh. I was too stunned to acknowledge them. Ian, though, didn't seem too surprised.
This is Daisy, he grinned.
Who is Daisy? I asked, my hand itching to sweep down the length of my leg and push off whatever was touching me.
Daisy, Ian rumbled. Please.
All right, creepy. What are you doing? I was about to look at Ian when one of the things on my leg became visible, causing me to gasp. Oh, my God, I cried. My eyes took in the tiny little dragon on my leg. It was as big as a medium-sized kitten in stature. It was solid black with white-tipped wings, all except for a small daisy shape on her chest.
I think you mean, oh, my dragon, Wink, Maddie murmured, her eyes going wide. Where in the hell did...
A gasp left her mouth as more and more showed up.
How cute is she? I asked, my hand going out cautiously to run one single finger down the tiny dragon's back.
Cute, Ian rumbled. I've been trying for 6 weeks to get her to show herself to you.
My brows rose at that. You've kept her a secret for 6 weeks, I asked. How? Why?
Daisy isn't allowed to leave the safe zone. He introduced his pet dragon to me. I think that now that she knows that we're here to stay, she might be a little more accommodating to who sees her.
Is she bonded to you like Mace is bonded to you? I asked.
Ian nodded. Yes, in a way. I named her, and she became mine.
My brows furrowed in confusion. They're fairy dragons, Brooklyn interrupted. Fairy dragons are the smallest of all types of dragons, more like pets than actual dragons, fierce and loyal. They're indigenous to Scotland and Ireland, and they've never been known to come here before now.
There are more? I asked.
Brooklyn nodded. About 10 in total. Each mated pair has 2, one for each person, except for you. Jean-Luc, Ian, Derek, and Skylar also have one.
Hmm, I giggled when Daisy started to chase my finger across the length of my leg.
Fairy dragons are so rare that they bring out the good in almost everyone, Brooklyn explained. They're playful like cats and loyal like dogs.
What's their story? I asked, giggling when a neon purple dragon appeared to also chase my finger. The other one that had been on my thigh for the whole time. This one actually caught my hand, though, and rolled over onto her back as she kicked at me with her back legs like a cat.
Fairy dragons grow to be about the size of a house cat, Brooklyn explained. But they're so rare that no one really knows anything about them. There are a few articles in my dragon archives, but they didn't tell us a whole lot. What I've gathered is that, mostly, they're social creatures who show up when someone worthy is brought forth. Those that can see them are worthy.
So I wasn't worthy until now, I guessed, studying Ian's dragon who was glaring at the newcomer dragon like it was an interloper who shouldn't be there.
You're worthy now because you've got your own dragon, which basically proves your worth. Brooklyn grinned. I think she showed herself to you out of jealousy because she knew you were about to be taken from her.
Hmm, I asked, lifting my hand with a laugh.
My dragon. The dragon was clinging to my hand like a monkey, using her wings to wrap around my hand to ensure she didn't fall.
Your dragon.
Ian's head moved, indicating the other dragon that was chewing on my fingernail. My head tilted.
I don't understand. I really didn't. I thought I couldn't have a dragon. I wasn't a dragon rider.
You don't have to be a dragon rider to have a dragon that's bonded to you, Ford explained.
I looked over at him, met his eyes for only a second, at most, and then couldn't hold them any longer. I let them slip to the side of his face, studying his hair instead of his eyes.
It's normal, Ian whispered. His power is to see into one's soul, to know their true thoughts and intentions. It takes a lot out of both him and the person whose soul he's seeing. His dragon has taught him some natural defense mechanisms that automatically repel people from connecting gazes with him.
My brow rose.
Wow.
Did you name your dragon? Ford pushed.
My eyes went back to his face, but this time I looked at his nose.
No.
I shook my head.
Creepy. Something practically shouted at me.
You didn't say anything in your mind.
He left it hanging, waiting for me to fill in the blank. I hesitated. Can they talk to me in my head? All of the occupants in the room, sans Maddie and Macy, who apparently didn't have dragons, nodded their heads.
Then yes, I named her. I started to snicker.
What'd you name her? Blythe asked, a sleeping baby against her chest.
Creepy.
That's not too bad. Kiefer mumbled. Mine's named Little Fucker.
At that, I lost my battle with my giggles.
Chapter 26 Ideas are born from a beard stroke. Fact of life. Ian. I found my wayward mate outside with dragons. Quite a few of them. 20, big and small, surrounded her while she read from a book.
It had been 2 weeks since the day Robert kicked the bucket. 2 weeks of much-needed downtime, although having Ford and Alaric back had a lot to do with that. With them added back into the rotation, I didn't have to go out every night on patrol. Now I only went out every fourth night, which was a lot more accommodating for a newly mated dragon rider. "You gonna come inside any time soon, Beauty?" I asked Wink. Wink, who was resting on the cool grass directly next to Daya, who was still recovering, turned her head in my direction. "Just let me finish this chapter, and then I'll come inside," she grinned. I knew what that meant. It likely wouldn't be the end of the particular chapter she was on, but one about 200 pages later. Grinning, like the fool I was, I bent down and scooped her up into my arms, causing her to squeak and drop the book on the grass. "Hey," she snapped, "that's book abuse." I rolled my eyes. She huffed a sigh of annoyance and then turned her head so she could look over my shoulder. "Good night, dragons," she called to the lot of them. "I have to go to bed now because my mate thinks he knows all. I'll see you all in the morning. Take care of my book." I didn't say anything to her as we made our way through the sanctuary. I nodded at a few of the others who were in some of the common rooms, including my sister, and headed straight for our bedroom. I didn't stop until I got to the bed, where I gently laid her down and covered her with my body. "What are you doing?" she gasped. I hadn't made love to her in over 2 weeks, since the night she'd told me about her pregnancy with another man's baby. And that wasn't due to allegations either, but by her putting me off with bogus complaints of being tired or not wanting it. I was on edge, and I needed to prove to her that I wasn't upset with her for sleeping with another man before we'd mated. And I told her so. "I love you. And this baby," I told her bluntly. She blinked. "The baby is wanted. The circumstances that the baby was conceived under weren't ideal, but I'll never take that out against you or her." She blinked away tears. "How'd you know?" she whispered. "You've been avoiding it," I mumbled, pushing my hands up the underside of her T-shirt. Her eyes widened. "I have not," she lied. I looked at her. "Nearly every thought that crosses your mind I'm privy to." I tapped her forehead with one finger. "All except for a select few, and those are the ones that I really want to know." "What?" she cried. "How?" I grinned. "You don't shield your thoughts worth a shit. If I'm in the vicinity of you, then everything you think, I think," I enlightened her. "Everything but the ones that you shield almost automatically, and those I only have to guess about." "Which ones?" she asked stubbornly. "I get faint hints of what they're about. You feeling bad about mating me when you were pregnant with another man's baby. Not feeling worthy of my love. Things like that." I looked into her eyes. "If I still find you attractive now that you've been soiled." Her eyes widened in alarm. "Don't say anything." I placed one finger over her mouth. She glared. "But I realized something when Robert died, when I saw his blood on the ground." I started pushing her shirt up and off her body, tossing it across the room and immediately dropping my mouth to place a wet kiss on the soft swell of her belly. She shivered. "What?" she asked, quivering slightly. "That the baby's DNA doesn't match Robert's." She tilted her head to the side. "What?" "The baby's DNA isn't matching up with Robert's," I repeated. "It's matching up with mine." She gasped and sat up, her face coming only inches from my face. "What are you talking about?" I ran my finger across her skin. "You were right." She tilted her head in confusion. "You were right that I was upset that you were carrying another man's baby," I admitted. "Upset enough that I didn't think to look more deeply than the surface. I could see that there was a baby, but the moment I did, I didn't want to be reminded that the baby wasn't mine, so I just stopped looking. Kept myself from seeing that deeply." She stayed silent. "And when Robert was lying there, dying, I made a discovery," I told her, trailing my fingertips down the side of her face. "The baby you're carrying is mine."
"How?" she breathed. "You had a vasectomy."
I shook my head. "I don't freaking know," I told her. "And honestly, I don't care. I don't care how it happened. Some fucking miracle, some fucking divine intervention, whatever it is, that baby inside of you is mine, and all of this shit about you worrying about me loving some baby that isn't mine doesn't even matter anymore." "I love you," I told her. "All of you." And then I showed her, making sure to touch my mouth to every single part of her body that I loved. Her mouth, her breasts, her feet, the insides of her thighs. I left nothing untouched, and by the time I finally got to her pussy with my mouth, she was a quivering mass of excitement, about ready to detonate. I stopped just short of pressing my lips to her clit and looked up her body. "You watching?" I asked. She bit her lip and nodded.
Then I grinned.
Good.
Then I devoured her pussy, burying my face in her beautiful body and bathing myself in her scent. By the time I was through with her, I'd wrung out 2 orgasms from her, and she'd lost the ability to hold her legs up.
Ready, baby?
I asked her, prowling up between her legs to situate myself snugly against her. Her eyes were filled with all kinds of things that I liked, and for the first time in weeks, I was able to breathe fully. That was what she did for me, though. She kept me sane and grounded, which allowed me to just be me. Notching my throbbing cock with her entrance, I slowly started to push inside, burying myself inside her so fully that there was absolutely no separation between us. Her lips parted and her eyes were glazed.
"I love you,"
she whispered. I smiled, leaning down to press my lips against hers. The slight swell of her belly caused my body to bow over hers, and I had a feeling that this was only going to get more interesting as time wore on.
"I love you, too."
We finished together, both of us exploding only moments after our declarations.
"You need to..."
"Don't touch me!"
Jean-Luc screamed outside our door. "Please, just don't touch me!"
"Jesus!" Maddie shouted. "I was just wanting to know if you're okay. Take a breath and try to, for once, be nice instead of the incredible douche you always are."
"I said don't..."
Wink's eyes widened as a hiss tore from Jean-Luc's throat and what felt like a jolt of electricity poured through our bodies.
"What the hell was that?"
Wink whispered to me.
"I think that,"
I got up, pulling myself free of her, "was my sister and Jean-Luc entering a crazy little thing called a mating dance." This concludes Oh My Dragon by Lani Lynn Vale, narrated by Kendall Taylor and Mason Lloyd. Copyright 2017 by Lani Lynn Vale. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Dixie Wardens Incorporated and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.